nobody really cares about our parental woes. Introduce us, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Preachers and Pinfalls podcast. So what's the haps, my friend, in the world of sports entertainment?
To be honest, man, when I do a few podcasts, and I really look forward to this one, as I do all of them, but the wrestling nerd in me really looks forward to this one just because I get to chop it up with somebody who's intelligent. Have you ever tried to explain wrestling to somebody who was a non-wrestling fan?
Yes.
Pretty hard. So,
but here's the funny thing. Most people who don't watch or used to watch when they were kids, they all say the same thing. They say, it's fake.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you watch movies, don't you? And I go, yeah. I'm like, well, movies are fake too.
How dare you?
And I love the rebuttal. The rebuttal is, well, that's not the same thing.
It's not, no.
It's not?
It kind of is.
Hmm.
I do have some outside the ring news. As I look forward to our podcast, I look forward to my outside of the ring news. I'm like a little gossip old lady when it comes to wrestling news. So outside of the ring, two major stories I want to hit on. One is relating around somebody you have an affection for inside the squared circle. I don't know if this story counts as outside the ring news because it affects his in-ring performance. Xavier Woods has an injury, and he's expected to be out for a pretty lengthy time. This is looking to be pretty serious. I do have one more outside of the news spot, but I wanna dive in this for a minute with Xavier being out for any length of time. What do you think is going to be the plan moving forward with Kofi and Big E?
That is a heck of a question. I can tell you, as someone, I can relate to his injury. I did not completely tear my Achilles in high school, but I had tears in it. I was fortunate because I was able to avoid surgery. But that was about 8 months.
Wow.
Of longest, loneliest, most torturous physical therapy. I would not wish physical therapy like that on anyone.
Now, question, is he still going to be able to, like, walk and do daily?
No.
You know? No.
No. Like, so he's you know, that kind of weird, funny, not quite bone sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you feel all, like, right above your heel, behind your ankle, that's your Achilles. It is the largest, most fibrous tendon in your lower body. And a torn Achilles means that thing is torn in half. So, and it connects basically your foot with your lower leg. So, like, when he gets that thing reattached, I mean, he's in good physical condition, so maybe it'll take maybe 3 or 4 months to heal, which means he's going to be on crutches for 3 or 4 months.
Now, I'm thinking Xavier reminds me of, what's that boy's name? Woo-woo-woo. Zack Ryder.
Zack Ryder.
In this, not in in-ring ability or how, or lack of thereof of a push, but in their personalities outside of the WWE. You know, both have phenomenal YouTube channels. Zack Ryder has a podcast with Curt Hawkins, I believe, and which is, I think it's with Curt Hawkins.
It is with Curt Hawkins.
Yeah, and it's doing well from what I've seen. But, you know, Xavier has the Up, Up, Down, Down YouTube channel. He, you know, gets the wrestlers to come on that. Do you think that he'll be able to build on even more? Like, I think this would be a great opportunity. And I'm kind of answering the question I just asked you. I think he'll be able, like, to use that, you know, like, as his way to stay in WWE without kind of being in it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and then on top of that, you know, if he wanted, he could go be an adjunct professor somewhere. He does have a PhD.
Oh, he's smart.
Yeah, those first 3 or 4 months, I don't think he'll be able to do much because, you know, there are certain injuries, and I'm talking like I'm a doctor, I'm really not. I've just been injured a lot.
Dr. Pryor.
And my very brief high school and sports collegiate career, there are some injuries that you can't do a whole lot because you have to wait on them to heal. Like neck surgery is like that. Like, and it's almost like you feel like you can do a lot, but you can't because it's not healed. But I think after that, yeah, he absolutely can do all his social media stuff, his up, down, down. He can do basically whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what they do when he comes back. Is he going to come back? We're talking at least a year.
At least.
So we're talking what, late 2020?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to come back and do the same thing? Or are they, is he going to come back and they're going to do something different? So I am very curious about that with him. I'm also very curious about that with Nia Jax, but I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. Next story, great segue, because we were talking about Xavier Woods. He has the up, down, down YouTube channel where they play games. And so this is about the newest WWE 2K game. I know that you haven't played a wrestling game in how many years, Dante?
A very healthy amount of years.
So I'm the opposite.
I'm gonna say I'm two PlayStations behind. So that's
okay. That's not too far behind me. I'm not an avid gamer. There are three games I play, you know, religiously for like the first week that they come out. That's Madden, that's NBA 2K, and WWE 2K. Those are my top three games I always find room for. I'm an avid, you know, lover of WWE 2K, the franchise, and I've been playing the game since, you know, Warzone is what it was on
PlayStation. Oh my PlayStation. God, PlayStation 1?
Yep.
The game was so awesome.
And then watch this. And then even before that, with the In Your House game, they have for like Sega Genesis or Super mm-hmm. Nintendo, like where Undertaker would like take your soul and Yokozuna would sit on you and like something crazy would happen. It was like Mortal Kombat ish, but I digress. I can talk games all day. This game though, right, has not been getting that. That's even giving it too much credit. People have been, forgive my language, shitting on this game because. One major component is at play. Jukes, which was a major developer for the game for the past, I don't know how many years, a very long time. They are not a part of they're not a part of that gaming process anymore. And so because of that, WWE had to go another route to find somebody to help them create this game. And so WWE over the past few years have been known with how fluid the characters were moving the game, how the realism behind it. And man, I'm hearing, and from what I've seen, the glitches in the game, the lack of, look at The Rock in that game and tell me if it looks like The Rock. I don't know who in the heck that is, but it is not Dwayne Johnson. A lot of their characters don't look like the people, which that would be excusable if in the past they were spot on. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. with them, I'm not a game developer, but with them losing Jukes, they lost a lot. And the outrage has been so bad. The game came out today. People, it has been a trending topic, I think, all day. WWE has taken notice of it, and the gaming organization, whoever made the game, WWE, 2K, whatever, they came out with not a statement, but they've addressed the concerns from fans. And they said that these have been the most complaint tickets that they've ever received for their game. And people don't like it. It sucks.
Jukes has been around. I would say Jukes has been developing WWE games since PS1.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking forward to getting it, but I don't know, man, if, because I did look at some of the features. Like, I looked at some of the gameplay online, and it does look really bad. Like, sometimes I will see gameplay and I'll be like, man, I cannot, that makes me want to play it. This makes me say, gosh, that I don't want to play that. It looks god awful. It looks bad. So those are my out of the ring news, man. I got some other stuff, but I to me, those are the most pressing. We could throw in how Randy Orton is trolling the internet once again. Did you see his post?
Oh, the Twitter post?
It was on Instagram, but I think he reposted it to Twitter.
Because I saw it on Twitter with him next to the word elite.
So you know he's my man crush. I love Randy. All things Randy. I'm gonna rename my son Randy when he gets old enough. I follow him on Instagram, and you know, I saw when he first posted it, and I was like, that Randy, that viper, that snake. People think he's really like teasing he's gonna make a jump to AEW. I highly doubt that. I think he's like in the midst of a 10-year contract with WWE, so not just for that reason, but
however,
comma.
What would happen to the internet wrestling community if like Jericho and Cody, although I would not recommend this because they've had too many schmozzy finishes on AEW.
Yeah.
They're wrestling for the title and the guy runs down and hits what Excalibur would call a cutter on Cody Rhodes. And then off the ski mask is Randy Orton.
You know, I've thought about all day, man, what that would look like. And I think the mark in me gets excited about what Randy would look like wrestling this version of Chris Jericho, and even what Randy Orton would look like in the landscape of AEW with a lot of young talent, even with Cody Rhodes. That's something I wouldn't mind seeing.
I think just to kind of tell it, Randy's one of those guys, like a lot of guys, I guess, these days, because there haven't been in a very long time too many other places to work.
Mm-hmm.
But Randy is homegrown. I mean, he washed out of the Marines, starting at OVW, went from OVW to WWE, youngest world heavyweight champion ever, and the whole nine yards. I would just be curious to see Randy. It's almost like thinking about like Joe Montana when he played for the Kansas City Chiefs. Or so if you're not that old school, like what would it be like if, you know, and I'm not an NFL watcher, but you know, it's kind of hard on social media not to know the NFL scoops. Like what would it be like if Cam Newton wore another jersey? Like
or Tom Brady. I think that's the even better analogy. If Tom Brady was to go to the Chicago Bears. You know what I'm saying? Or no. I think the better example would be Tom Brady going to the XFL. I would be interested in seeing that, to be quite honest. I think Randy's at the point in his career where he can only make, I think, that the rest of that roster better. But to me, I think that Randy will complement a Y2J on that roster. How about
I know you said those are most pressing. You got anything else?
I do not. Nothing that's worth mentioning.
So I want to know your thoughts.
Okay.
On AEW.
Okay.
I just want to sit back and listen. Because you've been clamoring for this show. I refused to talk about it until it became a thing. Then it became a thing. And you were excited. Well, partially because you was in your feelings about WWE at the time. So now it's here. You've seen at least half of it.
I've seen two solid episodes.
Two solid episodes. So, okay. This week is episode 3, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
304. I think it's three. Listen, and again, I have to preface this for all of the people listening. I don't want you to think my statements come from a place of I hate the WWE. I'm anti, you know, that organization. I love the WWE. I want them to be the better wrestling product. It's just because that's what I grew up on. I have an affection for them. So I'm not biased. I'm a wrestling fan, right? But I love the WWE. In saying that, AEW is good. Of course, they've got, they're new to televised wrestling, a weekly program. But man, from the way they're using their talent in rivalries and storytelling and in match types is good. I could go on for days about how they are utilizing and resurrecting the tag team division. They're doing stuff that New Japan had been doing, but the great thing is that guys like the Young Bucks and even other tag teams on that roster, I forgot who the Young Bucks went against, the black team.
Private Party.
It's good. You know, it's the thing about AEW that I'm really liking is that it's a good wrestling show, but it's also becoming like a good show, a good entertainment show. I enjoy it from both aspects. I wasn't sure if I was going to like Jon Moxley, not the character, but how I wasn't sure if they were going to utilize him right. And I think they are. Hangman Page, Y2J with the whole stable that he's got. I'm excited to see, I'm looking forward, or I'm anticipating to see how they use formerly known as Jack Swagger. I think it's Jack Hager. I forgot.
Jack Hager, that's a shoot name.
So I like it, man. And again, I'm not like a huge AEW mark. I just recognize that they had a really good idea. If you ask me to compare it to NXT, I'll say that NXT is very good as well. Exceptional. I will tell you this, though, that AEW is definitely giving NXT a run for their money. And if WWE overall with Raw and SmackDown keep making some of the missteps that they're making, I would not be surprised. Years time, more attention is on AEW than it is on WWE. Now you can't take money out of WWE's pocket; they're going to make money. But I mean, the true wrestling fan, I would not be surprised if you see more eyes on AEW. If you start seeing more ratings slip, we're not talking about what's going to affect WWE's pockets. Their pockets are deep and long, but I'm saying that I wouldn't be surprised if ratings continue. I think that AEW recognized an opportunity, and they're taking full advantage of that, man. Their matches have been stellar. I haven't seen one bad match. A few mishaps, right? A couple matches. But I haven't seen something that's been like, oh, it's expected. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, man, they've been doing A1 job, you know, with the exception to the name Dynamite. it's good. It's good, man. I cannot complain. I like it.
What do you think about the commentary?
It needs work. I think that they thought that if they got JR into it, that he would compensate for the lack thereof with the other guys. And I don't think it's bad commentary. I just think they need to learn how to mesh. And I think that commentary for house shows and live shows are different than commentary for televised weekly programs.
I agree.
I think that once they learn that, I think they'll be okay. But it's fully expected because people tend to forget WWE went through a rough patch before they were really able to mesh a JR and a Jim Ross and a King Lawler.
McMahon was so bad.
He was.
What a maneuver. Yeah.
Not even Vince. You know, Jesse Ventura was good, but the pairing.
Bro.
You put that guy with Vince, it just didn't work.
Wait a minute. The best pairing, other, in my opinion, old school WWF, other than Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, was Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon.
I think Gorilla Monsoon was excellent. You know, I'm going to be honest, man. Two people who don't, one of them does get acknowledged as an announcer, but Taz and JBL were great color commentators.
Michael Cole and JBL were great.
Well, no, I'm not saying together as a team. I'm saying like in the individual runs as commentators, they were really good. Taz was great as a commentator, and JBL was good as a commentator. Not as a team, like by themselves, like individuals, they were good at that.
So you know my love-hate relationship.
Right. Yeah, everybody. Michael Cole's mother has a love-hate relationship with Michael Cole.
But the way Michael Cole made Taz and JBL look good, the way he was able to almost seamlessly meld with two completely different color guys was phenomenal. And Michael Cole doesn't get enough credit for that. So I want to ask you a couple more questions about AEW, and then I'll talk a little bit about AEW. You mentioned they're doing some stuff that New Japan does. What specifically do you see kind of similar between New Japan and AEW?
The match styles and the style of wrestling. Though, so when I say match styles, the way AEW uses a ladder reminds me of New Japan versus the way WWE will use a ladder. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is my perception, I think WWE and a ladder, this is just an example, right? I'm not even like digging deep into breaking it down. You know, this is just like surface example. WWE uses the ladder like it's a person. AEW / New Japan, even more so, uses the ladder as an accessory, as like a part of the match, not an actual person. You know, you feel like when you're watching AEW, New Japan, that the ladder can be used to damage somebody. It almost feels like WWE they protect the ladder. Does that make sense? It's like they use the person, the talent, to protect the ladder almost. Yes. That, and then the style of match. Like, you see the way they move, you know, because WWE is known as the land of the large man, as a large person. New Japan and AEW, you know, fundamentally have, I don't want to say smaller guys, but they're not John Cena's. You know, you're not going to see, it's not the land of the giants.
That's
so
true.
That pacing and that style of wrestling fits to the stature of that wrestler. And I think it works really good for them. And it reminds me of like a New Japan kind of fast paced style, but you got like these smaller guys working these matches as opposed to a WWE. You know, I heard somebody talking today about the way they're using Drew McIntyre. Like, it almost seems that every big person the WWE gets, with the exception of Braun Strowman as of late, every big person, he's slow, moves real methodical, and like a club, he moves like Goliath. Like, if I can imagine if Goliath was a professional wrestler, he would, you know, that's the way they use their big men, you know? So that's a fundamental thing that WWE does. You don't see that with New Japan and AEW.
So I am with AEW. I'm definitely very much wait and see. I think what you're seeing on Wednesday nights is you're seeing two programs with NXT, because NXT has been the wrestling show.
Yeah.
And AEW is the wrestling show. And I think I tweeted it last week. AEW was solid, and I get the buzz, and it's well deserved. And you know, you're talking about somebody who grew up watching multiple wrestling companies. Like, it's cool to have another major players, because I mean, there've been other wrestling companies. You know, I will argue anyone down from 2004 to 2006, TNA was putting on as good a stuff as WWE was at that time, but they were not as big.
Yep.
That's a whole story about leaving Spike and all that other stuff. But you know, until AEW, yes, there were other companies. You had Ring of Honor, and you know, you had New Japan trying to make their way into the US. And then the Fight TV app really gave a lot of wrestling fans access to independents, like Rocky Mountain Wrestling and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which Championship Wrestling from Hollywood was really good that way. But there was not another major player. So that's great. It's awesome. But last Wednesday, that was the tag match main event with Hangman.
Crazy. Ridiculous, man.
Hangman Page.
Ridiculous, man.
So it was what, Hangman Page and Moxley, and it was Pac and Jericho. Was that the main event?
Yeah.
The tag main event?
Yeah.
There was not a match on that card that was anywhere close to as good as Leo Rush and Drew Gulak. for the Cruiserweight Championship that same night.
I'll give you that. I'll definitely give you that. I will definitely give you that.
That match every and Bianca Belair and Mia Yim blew the AEW's ladies match out of the water. And here's the irony about that, because that was Rio and Britt Baker. And they probably, when maybe not Mia Yim, but I know both of those ladies for AEW definitely have more wrestling experience than Bianca Belair. But Bianca Belair is a freak athlete. And about just a 10-second digress, we need to start using the term freak athlete more often in professional wrestling. But man, as far as the straight match quality, I mean, oh my gosh, Kushida versus Walter, AEW has not hit a match nearly that good.
You say that last part again?
AEW has not hit a match that good.
No, you're right. So, I'm not taking that away from you.
So, and I don't want to be the guy who sounds like the WWE shill.
You do.
Because I'm not.
Hulk Hogan.
Brother. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I got something to say about Hulk Hogan.
You sound like Hogan.
My biggest issue with AEW, and I know what they're trying to do, but I'll give you the analogy. So you pastor a church, right?
I do.
About how long do you preach?
Maybe 45 minutes.
Okay. So do you know why you don't have to preach and say everything you want to say on a Sunday?
Because I come back next Sunday.
Come back next Sunday.
Yeah.
When I was a senior pastor, my bishop told me, he said, listen, man, you don't have, and I've never preached for an hour, but like he goes, look, don't fall into that trap of feel like you gotta say everything on Sunday. He said, you're gonna be that next week. I feel like these first 2 weeks, AEW's tried to make sure that you see everybody in those first two Wednesdays. To the point where I'm kind of old school. I think main events should have us in it.
Yeah. Let me say this real quick. I agree. I want to tag on this thought. AEW, one of the things I've noticed is that they don't give you a reason to tune back in next week. You know how we talk about Raw and SmackDown, but at least they will leave you with some kind of cliffhanger to like, okay, I know it's going to be whack, but I want to see how this wraps up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so exactly. AEW exactly. Doesn't do that. Like, to your point, they do put everything out there on the table, but then also they don't leave you for what we will call in script writing class a cliffhanger or a reason to tune back in next week. Well, why am I doing that?
Here's the thing. So Jericho's put together this thing called the Inner Circle.
I kind of like it, to be honest.
And I like it. So I heard somebody say that it may be a nod to an X-Men story arc that I don't know anything about. But why not pay that off at the pay-per-view? Like, and here's the thing, man, there's nothing new under the sun in pro wrestling. Look at how they introduced and built the original NWO.
When it was
Hogan, Nash, and Scott Hall.
Yeah.
So you got Jericho, you got Sammy Guevara, you got Jake Hager, and you got who used to be LAX. And I can't even think of any name. I know one of the dudes is Ortiz. I can't think of the other cat's name. And I've seen Jake Hager live, and he's
a large man.
You're talking about somebody who passes the Randy Orton test. He passes the Randy Orton test, and then he is a large human.
He's a large guy.
But you don't have to bring those guys in every single, you know, in 2 weeks. You could just kind of have them. You could lay those Easter eggs, and then when you're wrestling Cody in the main event of Full Gear, give. Pay that off when people are paying to watch you.
Yeah.
Like, start hitting around like, yeah, we got somebody. We got, you want to bring the Elite? You want to get Kenny and the Bucks? You know, you want to try to get them? Oh, we got somebody. Now, I'm going to be honest. When these advertisements on my timeline kept coming through, talking about they're going to have this big-time athlete on AEW, and I was like, oh, okay, they got somebody big. Who is it? And it's freaking Jack Swagger. And yeah, great. Everybody was all up on Jericho's sack about how he buried We the People chant.
Yeah. I saw that. That was actually pretty good.
But here's the thing. As much as he buried it and thought it was bad creative, that was the only thing that got Jack Swagger over in the WWE.
You're absolutely correct. Listen, I got
biggest thing you did the company.
I got to quarterback this thing, man. I got to quarterback this thing. Okay.
I'm trying to think. Am I done talking about AEW and WWE? So yeah, quarterback it.
I'm gonna call a quick audible. An honorable mention. I do want to mention an honorable mention. I was able to check out a little bit of Impact Bound for Glory. And I will say three. I'm going to say, have you seen it or have you read of it?
I knew it, and I wish I would have known that it was coming to the Odeon earlier, because I would have probably went.
I'm going to, yeah, it was in Chicago. I'm going to tell you guys three things real quick about it. Impact is not TNA what you're used to. This was a pretty good show. It was not like I'm saying it was good for it being Impact. They found their niche with kind of creative and out there storytelling, and it works for them. It's kind of wonky, but it works for them. Two matches I think that I will give an honorable mention to. There was a triple threat tag team match between, I didn't even know Rhino and RVD were still wrestling, but they're a tag team.
Okay, I didn't know Rhino was an Impact. I knew RVD was.
Rhino and RVD versus these guys called the North and Swan and Mac. Again, guys, I'm sorry if I don't know them, you know, fully. But
I know Swan from WWE.
I will say, was he?
Yeah.
Who was he?
He was Rhett Swan.
Oh, it was a pretty solid match. It was kind of crazy, kind of out there, but it speaks to what Impact is doing. The thing that made the match so good was this unexpected turn by RVD at the end. So he turned on Rhino. I would say go watch that match for the ending. And if you just like nostalgia and want to see Rhino and RVD in action. The match between Terry Blanchard, I'm trying to see who she went against.
Tessa Blanchard.
Thank you, Tessa Blanchard.
It
was a. I'm trying to find the ticket. Give me a minute, guys. Give me a minute, guys.
Did she wrestle for the championship?
No. Yes, she did wrestle for the championship, but it was like. It was intergender. That rhymed. It was intergender. It was. Let me see.
What time did she wrestle for?
Tessa Blanchard, Daga, Ace Austin, and a mystery opponent. They were fighting for the X Division Championship. It was a pretty solid match. Tessa didn't win, but man, looking at her dog, and I don't know if this is the WWE mark coming out of me, but I would really like to see her in a program with Charlotte Flair.
Hey, man, Tessa has it.
She does. You talk about somebody being Randy Orton, you know, like passing that test. She passes that test.
So I am fairly, you know, for the most part, a hardcore wrestling fan, which I've made no bones about.
You have not.
One of the reasons women of wrestling is on my DVR. Other than the fact that it still blows my mind that Jeannie Buss like owns the Lakers and she produces pro wrestling, is Tessa Blanchard wrestled for a while, and if memory serves, as she wrestled in the first Mae Young Classic, and she was around NXT for a cup of coffee. I don't know why. Of all like the second, third generation wrestlers that they've tried to get in WWE, I don't know why she is not one of them.
I wouldn't be surprised if they've tried, just she didn't go. Or maybe they're saying we're watching her and to see what she develops into. You know what I'm saying? It could be one of those cases.
It might be. Yeah, she's enough.
All right, so that's, you want to hop in Raw? And we've been reviewing Raw. It's 36 minutes in. I know we got to talk about, that's what the majority of the show is going to be about, reviewing Raw. Am I correct to make that assumption? Is there anywhere specific you want to go in Raw? Is there so
much? Thoughts about the week.
I did skip a part. I'm so sorry. I apologize. Don't body slam me.
I won't. I promise.
Argue with me, Kofi. Take us there.
All right, this is about to get serious.
Oh, okay.
You
don't have cancer, do you?
I do not. So I text you a few days ago. I was having trouble watching WWE.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to give you the kayfabe side and then the shoot side.
Tell us.
So on kayfabe, not only did I lose, but I like got smashed by Brock Lesnar. Man, I want them on damn pancakes. If, first of all, you're not going to see me. Secondly, if you're going to see me, I ain't wearing no purple tights, throwing no pancakes, smiling, dare I say, shucking and jiving, because I just lost the WWE Championship.
Yes.
So that's the kayfabe side. The shoot side is I have not seen any acknowledgement of Kofi Kingston being a former WWE World Heavyweight Champion. How do you go from winning the championship at WrestleMania? And I'll admit, I say that, and it's almost like they took my advice. It's like, give them the better WrestleMania and just figure out everything after that. They didn't really figure out much because the Randy Orton angle fell flat and it was WWE's fault.
It was. Definitely was.
And, you know, Samoa Joe fell flat for the same reason. But between that and the fact that when, even before they reconfigured the announce teams, and I know, you know, you were not an NXT watcher, but Percy Watson was part of the three-man booth with Mauro Ranallo and Nigel McGuinness. And then they just kind of scooted the brother off to put in Beth Phoenix and, like, had nothing for him. And then you bring in Dio Madden, who's good on Raw, but it still seems as if you scooted Byron Saxon off SmackDown, you scooted Percy Watson off NXT, you bring in Dio Madden to check your Negro box. And then you basically treated Kofi like a transitional champion. And not even like a transitional champion, because you squash him, you bring in, like, you know, 9-year-old hormonal disorder Cain Velasquez, who nobody cared about. Like, that angle didn't even need a championship. And nobody, like, there was no pop when Rey Mysterio brought him into the ring. And then there were probably some chuckles when he took off his shirt, because he looked like me when he took off his shirt.
Facts. He looked worse than you.
He does.
I've seen you in the gym. We've gone to the gym together. He looks so awesome. No homo.
But my wife asked me a question.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
So she asked me a question. She said, if you know WWE is this obtuse about race, so why are you still watching? And I could not answer her, because this is the reason I don't watch the National Football. This is the exact reason I have not watched a professional football game since the league blackballed Colin Kaepernick. And here's the thing. When the NFL basically said, okay, bro, you basically have a case, so we'll settle out of court. Because when you settle out of court, you basically saying the defendant, I'm sorry, not the defendant, but the plaintiff has a case. And it's a good enough case that you don't want this to go to court, so we're just going to go ahead and settle up. And he got restitution for labor lost. I said, okay, I can watch now. And I try it. And in good conscience, I cannot watch a professional football game. And when I watch, especially when I watch SmackDown, with Raw, Raw's just bad. It's just a terrible show. When I watch SmackDown, I'm just looking at this like, why am I watching?
I want to throw a question to you.
Talk me off.
I may not talk you off. I may give you more incentive to jump. But when you're looking at the race in WWE, so let's kind of historically look back to all of the major African American wrestlers, right? Mm-hmm. Ahmed Johnson.
He was awful.
Farouk. Mark Henry.
But I don't even want to get started on Farouk. But
so my question is this, and I don't know how to say this without coming across as an Uncle Tom, but do you think that the caliber of black wrestlers is as good as the white wrestlers? Let me say this. I look at, of course, a Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. Randy Orton is perfect in the ring.
Okay.
He's just perfect. When I look at a Triple H, Triple H is really good. Like, his character's good. His in-ring ability is really good. Mm-hmm. But then when I go down the line of black wrestlers, gosh, I'm looking at Mark Henry, who, this has nothing to do with him being big, but even, mm-hmm. I can't get behind that, even as a black fan. I look at Mabel. I can't.
You want to fan of men on the mission?
There has not been, for me, and I guess I'm talking from my perspective, but then asking the question. For me, there has not been enough black characters for me to really rally behind and say, wow, they blew me away. Do you think that's the issue? And if your mind is going where I'm going, the only wrestler that I can say that has made me think that way has been Booker T. Now, we know with Booker T getting squashed, I think that had less to do with race and more to do with Triple H's ego. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that we have the caliber of black wrestlers in WWE?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
So,
character-wise, too. Not just in-ring ability, but character-wise. Okay.
So give me a little room.
Good.
So let me go back.
Work your text, Doc. Work your text.
So when you talk about the kind of the continuum of black wrestlers in WWE specifically, I go back to Junkyard Dog.
Okay.
Now, I only knew JYD as JYD. And it wasn't until later, as I started collecting the DVDs and learning about the history, that I learned about Sylvester Big Daddy Ritter. And that was JYD's character in Mid-South before he came to the WWE. He was, and if you don't know the territory of Mid-South, that was Cowboy Bill Watts. Mid-South, you're talking about Arkansas, Louisiana, West Tennessee, Kentucky, that area.
Okay.
Think about that area in the late 70s, early 80s. Okay. Junkyard Dog was the Mid-South heavyweight champion as a dark-skinned black baby face. Coco Beware.
Yeah.
Coco Beware, before he came to WWE, what was a main eventer in what would become Smoky Mountain Wrestling, run by Jim Cornette in the 1980s. Hulk Hogan has been on countless interviews, and he said, brother, Junkyard Dog got hot. He said, man, Junkyard Dog for a time was hotter than me. He said, I went to Vince. He said, I'll go back and get my white trunks and my white boots. He said, I'll do kind of like a cross between He was a character in Florida called Sterling Gold. It was the worst thing I'd ever seen. And Thunderlips from Rocky, he said, "I'll mold him." He goes, "I'll turn heel and put the belt on Sylvester and let him run with it for a year." Vince was like, "Nope, you keep winning." And to go from that to, yes, Booker T was world heavyweight champion in the WWE. And when he was champion of WCW, he didn't draw a dime. Mm-mm. And a lot of that was because of the issues with WCW at the time he finally became champion.
Yes, yes.
But you mentioned Farouk. Farouk, a.k.a. Ron Simmons, when he was in WCW, he was the All-American Ron Simmons, because he's All-American in Florida State. He was the first lineman to ever be invited to New York to be a Heisman Trophy finalist. And when he started wrestling, he was in a tag team called Doom, managed by Teddy Long. They became NWA World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, him and Butch Reed. But then I want to say in 1992, I may be wrong, there was a free special called Tango in Tampa. And I watched a black man become world heavyweight champion. He beat Big Van Vader in Florida. I'm sorry, it wasn't last Tango in Tampa. It was something, something in Jacksonville. It was in Jacksonville, Florida. He became world heavyweight champion on a major show that was a sellout. And then he goes to WWE. He had a great run with JBL and the Acolytes.
Yeah.
But I'm like, he took the first black world heavyweight champion and he put him on like a Roman gladiator costume. I'm like, that's what you do to Ron Simmons? That was disrespectful. And I even thought that back in the day. So let's fast forward to Kofi. And you know the story. Kofi was white hot when he wrestled that match against Randy Orton in Madison Square Garden. I remember specifically what I thought. Mm-hmm. At that time, I want to say Rey Mysterio was out with like knee surgery number 4. I said, he can take the Rey Mysterio spot. Kids loved Kofi.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, if they could put the belt on him, oh my gosh, you talking about a guy, kids loved him, which means parents loved him. He was like Black John Cena.
He was like
the perfect PG.
He was making money for the company, selling merch.
A relatable star. And then he misses a spot. And Randy was the golden boy, as big of a screw up as he was back then. I mean, that man was suspended for everything from steroid use to being late at shows all the time. But he was the golden boy. He got Mr. Kennedy fired.
He did.
And he missed that spot. Kofi took that stiff RKO and got buried. Comes back, wins the championship, has mediocre at best programs. But every time he walked out of that ring with that belt, the crowd popped tough and heavy for Kofi. I knew he was going to lose to Brock.
Oh, yeah. I think we all knew
he was going to lose to Brock.
Yeah.
But no one wanted him to lose like that. And I get it. It's pro wrestling. It's a work. It's kayfabe. But there's a way, but we know in kayfabe there's something called looking strong.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way to lose without looking weak. And the fact that he lost, got squashed, and I'm sorry, I know Brock Lesnar's a big dude. I've seen like you YouTube search Brock Lesnar training videos. He's a freak athlete and he trains like one. But I'm sorry, you got something of mine that you took, the way you took it, I need another crack at you.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when Ric Flair beat Ricky Steamboat in Nashville, Tennessee, and Ricky just basically rolls out of the ring, and then they start a whole new program with Terry Funk. And like, Ricky Steamboat never sniffs the World Heavyweight Championship again. And it's like, but the difference is, even when he went back to WWF, they acknowledged that Ricky Steamboat was a World Heavyweight Champion in another company. There's nothing that has even acknowledged that Kofi Kingston was World Heavyweight Champion, and he just lost the belt like a month ago.
I'm going to push back a little bit on you. I'm not defending racism at all. I do believe that inherently.
You're not defending racism.
I believe there is institutionalized racism within WWE. I do wholeheartedly believe that. Structurally, systematically, yes. But also in addition to that, I think about Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, like their first runs as champions, I don't think they're acknowledged. And Triple H says this, and I hate to quote Paul Levesque, but either you have two scenarios. Either the guy makes the championship or the championship makes the guy. And I think in neither of those cases, Daniel, that first run, CM Punk, that first run, or even Kofi with this most recent run, I don't think that they were able. I don't think Kofi was able to really embrace or be the champion that we needed him to be as it relates to he's memorable. Memorable. Now, a lot of that can go to WWE creative, but dude, I really feel in my heart of hearts that if you are a standout, Now, granted, WWE has been racist and they are racist. I'm not saying they're not. But I'm also saying that I do think that if Kofi was the kind, I think even with their racist selves, they put the belt on them saying, let's see what he does with it. And I think that even like with examples of Samoa Joe and Randy Orton, those were flatlined by WWE creative. But I think that a good enough character would have been able to carry those stories through. That's just my thought. I think that if it was Booker back in his day and put in that program, Booker was able to make that thing with him and Triple H work. Although he got squashed, he made it work.
And he should have won the championship at WrestleMania.
He should have. That's the racism. That's the racism there. He should have won. But tag on to that, he was able to make it work because Booker knows how to be a character. I think nothing about the Invasion WCW storyline was great, except Booker T and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was it. I think a lot of that credits Booker T. So I'm looking at Kofi, man, and I'm like, I'm glad he's got the belt, but I don't think Kofi can be the kind of champion that can carry a story, that can really impact a rivalry. And I don't know if that's because of a lack of deficiency on his end or because WWE hasn't put him in enough programs. I just don't think he got it. You know who I do think has it though? Off the cuff, I think Big E got it. If you look at New Day, I think Xavier has it, but he's shelved right now. I think Big E could carry that because Big E can be a face and he can be a great heel. We've seen him work it.
I know E can be a great champion because when I first started watching NXT, when he first got called up to WWE and was working heel, we first came up with them on the main roster with Dolph Ziggler and AJ Lee. He was the babyface champion on NXT. And I don't disagree with anything that you said. But
oh wow, let's put this on record.
I don't disagree with anything that you said, but here are my question.
Okay.
Like, first of all, let's talk bottom line. The best-selling WrestleMania T-shirt was Kofi's. During Kofi's run, because you can't say that they can't draw, because he is part of the New Day, and the New Day moves more merch than anyone in the company. They move more merch than Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins combined. So that I don't agree with.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. I think that's the racism right there. Ignoring that fact.
Now here's the thing. When you talk about creative, Kofi's talent And I don't know what Kofi had or did or did not pitch while he was champion, but the fact is, when he was champion, like the Randy Orton story, Randy Orton kept saying, you weren't good enough then, you're not good enough now. But you know, the one simple thing that WWE creative never did, they never had Randy Orton explain why he wasn't good enough. And you can't do things like have that ridiculous finish that you had. What was that, SummerSlam?
No, I believe so.
When Randy like looked at it, like, but his son Kyle was ready for him though. Kyle was like Randy was gonna catch like a sixth grader trouble in paradise. He got too close to that boy mouth.
They never explained it.
But exactly. That's on the booking. So, and then there's even the meta argument that, and I call it the Monster's Ball argument, the Monster's Ball / Training Day argument. It's like, you gotta come and dance and throw pancakes to be that popular. When Kofi proved he could beat that over without doing that.
True.
So in order for the black wrestler to be somewhat popular. And FYI, this is why Jay Lethal did not sign with WWE. Mm. But we got to resort to these tropes and archetypes, because you go once again, go all the way back to Junkyard Dog. JYD wouldn't jigging and juking when he was in Mid-South and he was the heavyweight champion.
Yes,
correct. So you got him juking and jigging, and then of course Coco Beware with Frankie, to the stereotypical crime time.
Yeah.
I will never forget listening to an interview with MVP. So MVP goes. He and R-Truth were wrestling in Japan together, and R-Truth was still working for TNA. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm going back to WWE, man. I got this new gimmick. Now, I remember those vignettes for R-Truth when he was first coming back. They were, like, serious. And he was like, man, you know, we're going to do something different. And MVP was like, man, I was excited for him, man. He's like, they're going to do something serious. He said, man, first night I see R-Truth come on TV. And he said, man, this nigga's still dancing. And R-Truth's still dancing. And which is why MVP, because MVP didn't want to fall into that box.
Yeah.
That's one reason why he fell out with WWE.
Yeah.
Because he was very vocal about the fact that WWE at that time had never had a black WWE champion. So you go to R-Truth, and then you go to the New Day. So we got to do this.
Yeah.
To be popular.
I agree.
Like Kofi let everybody know in that Hell in a Cell match that Kofi is still one of the best
performers
in that company.
I got a question I want to throw out to you. I think we can end it. We can end it on discussing this.
Okay.
Triple H talks about kissing the brass ring. And so when I take that in my thought and I look back at not just champions, but I look at guys who have been dominant pillars or figures that you remember in WWE, there were guys that were willing to go off of the script and willing to take that opportunity. I think about Punk. I think about Stone Cold Steve Austin really comes to mind, who is documented as being somebody that kind of did his own thing when he got in front of that camera. What the script writer said, he did his own thing. Do you think that maybe there is this fear amongst the black wrestlers to state almost the plantation mentality, right, fam? Mm-hmm. Like, to stay in line, I'll stay in line and just do what I'm told to do. Because I'm inclined to think that if Kofi... No, but let's use Montel Vontavious Porter as an example.
I know that very vividly, too.
I think that if MVP would have gone off script and, like, did his own thing, not only would he have... I think he was over with the fans anyway. But not only would he have been over with the fans, I think that management would have been like, oh, he's... Because we see the reaction. Like, you did it and it works. I think the only time management will get pissed off if a talent goes off script is when it does not work. But if Shawn Michaels has been documented as a working, Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, has. So, like, if these guys can do it, they're white, right? But I think that the black guys are like, let me just stay in my lane because I'm afraid of what might happen. I think if we just need one black character to say, let me go off the script and let my character shine. I think that it will work. And you know who I think could possibly do it? My guy from the sister tag team from NXT who just got called up to Raw.
Street Profits.
Not the bigger guy, the smaller guy.
You're talking about Montez Ford. Yeah, Montez Ford has it.
Go for it. I want to tell him, if I could sit down and have a conversation with him, I would say go for it and see if it works.
I feel bad for Angelo Dawkins because eventually he's going to be without a tag partner again. Well, let me say three things about that. And these would be my closing.
Did you like those points though? Did you like my points though?
No, I agree to an extent, but I think that we know now in 2019, man, WWE is so heavily scripted.
Yeah.
Like nobody can go off script. That's why Dean Ambrose is in AEW now.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of this thing where like I can pitch and I can suggest, but if Vince says no,
yeah,
then and I go off script, I'm gonna lose my job. So same reason Cody Rhodes left WWE. He was like, they only saw me as this. I saw myself as this. I pitched this. They said no, so I had to leave.
Yeah.
Or you can be a hoe for the money like Dolph Ziggler. And I don't even want to start shooting on Dolph Ziggler. You know, Dolph is there for one reason, because can't nobody else pay him seven figures.
You know I love Dolph, man, so stay off of Dolph.
I love Dolph, too. But you can't tell me that he gets underutilized the way he gets underutilized, and then you always hear about his contract being up and the possibility of him leaving, and all of a sudden he resigned. They ain't nothing but he want that paycheck.
Dolph should have been world champion. He was once, but he should have been a real world, like when it counts, at least two times.
Yeah, probably. He should have. But he won WWE because of how he's seen. And he don't have a sack to leave.
Mm. Yes.
So that's kind of my first point.
I hope he's listening. I hope Dolph is listening.
I hope he's listening too. And he can try to super kick me if he wants to, but I know a little jiu-jitsu, so I got something
for him. I'm gonna just fall. So,
but everything is scripted. That's kind of the first point. I think with my second point is like, so you brought up Triple H a couple times. Here's the thing about Triple H. Triple H was not seen initially by Vince as a main event guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you listen to Bruce Pritchard.
Those are facts. Episodes,
and I don't know if you've heard him mention that about Triple H before.
I have.
But for some reason, certain guys, Shawn, Bruce himself, a couple other guys, kept pitching for Triple H. And Triple H had several starts and restarts.
Yeah.
Until they found DX and it hit. But he got opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for that to hit. And if they would have never found DX, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Paul Levesque, he may still have ended up marrying Stephanie and been an executive in WWE, but he'd have been a multi-time intercontinental, he'd have been The Miz.
Mm.
But he kept getting chance after chance to try to break through the main event. When that incident happened with Kofi and Randy Orton in Madison Square Garden, where were his opportunities after that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, Big E arguably was the most popular NXT champion in the early NXT days. And everyone who worked at NXT at that time raved about how great he was. Where's Big E's opportunity to be World Heavyweight Champion on the main stage?
Yeah.
Michael P.S. Hayes, who has been noted to be a bigot. And he's my first all-time favorite wrestler, by the way. But he said in an E60 documentary where they had a camera during one of the booking meetings for NXT, said about Xavier Woods, if he was 6 feet tall, he'd be World Heavyweight Champion. Where's his opportunity to be World Heavyweight Champion?
Yeah.
When R-Truth stopped dancing and shucking and jabbing and turned heel, you remember when he turned heel?
I remember.
Great heel run. Got one main event in DC. And you know what he went to go back doing? He went back to shucking and jabbing. Man, where were his opportunities?
When he had that thing with that run with the Miz against Triple H, when Triple H was just getting into that executive role, that was golden. Hey. That was some of the best stuff I've seen.
So here's my thing: when you say, are there black wrestlers talented enough? Absolutely. But you have to have, but you got to have opportunities to find your character. Man, look, now granted, Stone Cold got, they gave him a little opening and he ran with it because Triple H was supposed to win King of the Ring the year he won.
Yep.
But he, that was the whole curtain call thing. And he took it and he was able to run with it. But what was Steve given? Opportunity. So it doesn't matter how good you are. Like Ricochet, I think talent wise can change the game, but he got to be more than just a plucky white meat baby face. And, you know, he got to be more than just a white plucky, you know, baby face who comes out and pucks his fist and does flips in the ring. But has he really been given a legitimate opportunity to sit down?
All Ricochet is another reincarnated version of Evan Bourne. If you ask me,
with more muscles.
That's it.
So last thing about Triple H.
You will stop talking bad about Paul.
Triple H is on
this podcast.
Hey, when it's all said and done, Triple H will have Dusty Rhodes-like influence in the business.
Yeah, that most definitely.
Because of what he did in the ring. And here's the thing. You can't talk about him burying guys. I'm old school. Trust me, Dusty buried guys too. And one of the guys he buried was Ric Flair. So, look, when you on top, you bury guys. That's just what it is. But Triple H, and Vince has talked about this in Triple H. They sat down after he had a knee injury. He was out for like 6 months. And he was like, Vince was like, well, Hunter, what do you want to be? And Triple H said, I want to be me turned up to 1,000. You know what Vince said to Triple H? Okay. Has he had that conversation with any of the black wrestlers?
I'll give you that. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
So it doesn't matter. You have to be given the opportunity. And I don't want to cause too much controversy, but you know, I look at the fact that you shovel off Percy Watson, you shovel off your brother, but you bring in a white woman like Beth Phoenix, and that just made me so upset.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the evidence is there, and again, a lot of what I said today, people, guys, was to play the devil's advocate. I like to be the protagonist sometimes to Dante's antagonistic views. But, you know, in a lot of the aspects, I agree. You look at a Bobby Lashley, look at a Shelton Benjamin.
We're trying to get off this podcast. Don't even get me started about Bobby Lashley.
But before we go, and after I say this, you can wrap us up. Take us out. Don't even comment because I know what you're going to say. But with Bobby Lashley, I look at what they did in TNA with him and MVP, which was golden. They had that with Bobby and Lio Rush. Bobby is somebody that needs a mouth. If you do it for Brock and Paul, why are you not doing it with Bobby Lashley? It just doesn't make sense. This program that he's in with Rusev and Lana is embarrassment for him and Rusev. Lana is beautiful, by the way. It seems like she gets more gorgeous by the week. I just want to say that. If my wife is listening, I will risk it all for Lana. Like, hey, I'm going to risk it. If Lana comes to me talking her English or Russian, I'm like, listen, hell, I don't care what you talk. I'm risking it all, kids. Why? I'm risking it all. But, man, listen, that was it. We've gone 70 minutes. Dante, DP, I'm going to start calling you DP because it sounds cool. I think this has been one of our better podcasts because we really got to dig into some good topics. The race and Kofi. And I loved it, man. I loved it. What did you think?
I agree as well. I want to say one final thing.
Go ahead, man.
And this is about AEW. And then I'm going to give the close right off this. AEW promised to be a company that was inclusive. And I know you had the native beast, Nyla Rose, first trans woman to wrestle in the main match, and that's great. But the show the last 2 weeks, AEW, if you're listening, you're awfully white.
It's true. But okay, I'm going to say this in agreeing with you, but then also pushing back. I look at the landscape of guys who enter the wrestling business. We are still the minority. And I don't even think that's by design. I just think that many of our African-American young men and women are not as into professional wrestling, the entertainment side, as our white counterparts. That's just my thoughts.
I won't disagree with that.
Okay. You won't or you will?
I will not.
Yeah.
Not tonight anyway.
Because the representation's not there too. That's another reason.
I agree.
All right. Take us home, man. Take us home.
Well, lay people of the leg lock, congregants of the camel clutch, with all due respect to the Hall of Famer, Special Delivery Jones, who's black. Until next time, we will catch you on the other side. We are out.
And I love Shorty Gable.